And the weather today, highs of 9 degrees centigrade, lows of 3 degrees centigrade, a dry day with some sunny spells, and as we said, sunset 11 minutes past 6.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
Quite right too. And RIP Paul Daniels, a Midweek Drive out of times past. He clocked up a number of gigs with the show, etc. And much beloved, of course, in Teesside, because Claire, he once parked his Bentley right across the no parking zone at the James Cook University Hospital. That's why we loved you, Paul.
No.
Exactly. That's why we loved
that
you.
Because
he's good. It's important. Never mind. A little sort of anecdote there about the great Paul Daniels. And I'm sure that up there he'll be doing some magical tricks as well. Well, yes. They might like it. Not a lot. I would go there. Big breaking news, Eva MacDonald.
Oh, what?
Because I committed a tremendous erratum, singular, in the first hour of the programme.
Did you?
Yep. I mentioned somebody who being resident in Carlisle.
Yeah.
No. Liv Clark is not... He might be a Carlisle correspondent, but not a resident. Isn't that right, Liv?
I know. Do you know, the first point of journalism, accuracy is
exactly. It's you know, critical in every sense. In fact, you know, the journalists are so disgusted with that, they've all walked out and left us. Literally. Emma Tinson, Tessa Snart, and Emily Jones just walked out. The message got through.
This is going to be a quick show then, isn't it?
They discovered feet of clay. Never mind. We'll work our way through.
If I lived in Carlisle, you wouldn't understand me. I'd speak broad Cumbrian and you wouldn't understand a word I was saying.
Right. Okay. But you are a West Coast babe, presumably.
I am, yes.
Yeah, that's okay. I just want to clarify that, because otherwise don't be getting confused with you. As I say, West Coast are British California. On a different topic... Liv, we were talking, at least you sent me a wonderful text, which said it's time you sort of promoted organ donation and things and such like that, because it's something that's very close to your heart, etc. Liv, share with us why you've decided to actually raise the profile of this very important and vital task for human
you've
beings.
You've done it again, Alex. It's not organ donation.
I've done it again, haven't I?
Yeah. Have you been drinking fizzy pop again?
It's the St. Patrick's Day celebration from that sort of perspective. That's what's going
to do. It's blood donation. It's organ donation is equally as important.
I knew donation was going to come in there in some way, shape, or
some
form.
Some form of bodily function thing.
What do you want? Accuracy at 4 minutes past nine in the morning? For goodness sakes. All right, let's move on to blood donation. Not quite as... Well, equally as important, but it won't necessarily mean you have to sort of die before you actually give your owner. Take it away, Liv. I'll just sort of go to the corner and sort of sit down for a while.
Just have a word with yourself and come back in a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, thank you for the opportunity to come and talk about blood donation. Many people don't really understand the blood donation process at NHS, and that's why the stocks are always very, very low, leaving quite a lot of vulnerable patients waiting in the hospital for blood transfusions. And blood is used in many different ways. It's used to treat cancer patients, anemia, road traffic accidents, and more recently, more horrific childbirth experiences. So there's quite a lot of reasons that blood is taken. But sadly, only 4% of the population actually give blood, and in the lifetime, 25% will need it. So it's quite a misunderstood exercise that you can do. I just donated my 15th plasma bag this week, and it takes 10-15 minutes to do. Not the most comfortable thing that you'll do, but it goes on to save up to 3 lives. So really today was just to highlight, Alex, that for those people out there aged between 18 and 70 who are reasonably fit and well and have 45 minutes spare time in their days to step forward and become a blood donor.
And as you rightly said in a fairly graphic Facebook update, so the morning after my blood donation and the battle scars are visible, scary, I may have an awful time donating blood because of my tiny veins. It's...
Oh, it's seriously bad, Alex. Honestly, God, I have to squeeze a tennis ball for a full duration, and you have a time limit before the buzzer goes off. So it's like having a game, a sort of running event until it gets to the end, and I just so do it in the last few minutes. So
this is what Midweek Driveouts actually do, of course, because Liv demonstrating there, just going that distance from that point of view. And as you rightly said, you've already booked in your next donation for July.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, men can give every 3 months, women can only give every 4 months, but it's certainly worthwhile, of course. I find it difficult, as do many people, and it can be quite painful if you've got small veins like I have, and about 10% of the population do have that problem. But I know that my friend daughter, who's just recently recovered from cancer, will benefit from that donation. So it's kind of a mind over matter thing. And the next day, you've replenished your stocks of blood in your own body, and you're back to normal. So it's no big deal, but it can go on to make a tremendous difference to up to three people.
My blood donation has been a really kind of big part of my life in terms of the fact I think my granny has donated. She's 77 now, and I believe she's donated upwards of like 60 times or something. Wow. She does it regularly on a regular basis, and I was recently very proud of my dad as well, because he is literally deathly afraid of needles. And he gave blood for the first time this year. And it was a really big deal
for him to do. A round of applause for Claremont Jarrison's father. Yay!
And he did it, and I was really proud of him, and it's something that he's hoping to do more regularly now. And I just think it's so important. My friend had surgery back in about 2009, maybe, on her back, and it was very major surgery, and I think she had, like, 8 blood transfusions or something as part of that, something ridiculous. Yeah. But it's just so important.
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't actually give that much. They say it's a pint, actually less than a pint. It's only 470 millilitres, but that bag contains platelets, cells, and plasma, and that can be split off and do many things, which is why it can help. One bag helps sort of three people. So people don't believe how powerful giving blood is. And yes, it's not particularly pleasant for some people, and I hate needles as well, absolutely hate it. So my process is awful. But it literally says 10, 15 minutes in the big scheme of things is nothing. But to know that in a week's time someone might be brought into hospital and need that bag, I know that I've done something that's right and proper. And it's just really, the NHS are constantly pushing for more people to come forward, in particular from minority groups and Black and Asian subtypes, and now European migrants are coming across, because their blood matches aren't quite the same as what I call the true British bloodline that comes through. So there's constantly big campaigns, but people don't realise quite how easy it is to sign up as a donor. You can do it online right now at blood.co.uk. You do a health screen test, so if you take medication or you've been ill in the past, they can work out if you're safe to donate. And from there, it's just a case of finding your local venue, which for me was a hotel, sometimes it's a hospital, and just step forward and do it. You get tea and biscuits at the end, so it's not a waste of your day. So.
And that's 15 times Olivia has donated blood. So, Olivia, you see that we see this because we've got her donor pass card, actually. Oh, there we are, working through that. Oh, it's just crashing in with all sorts of things there. Microphone technique, Eva. Thank you for using our online booking service. You have given blood. That's stage 4. Now it's 15 times. So, there we are. It's amazing.
I've got a lot to do to catch up with over 60. But I will do it.
It's not a challenge, but I'm sure exactly it will be there. It will be sorted through.
I would have done more, but every time I get a cold, I can't do it. You've got to be very, very clear. If you don't feel particularly well, never give blood, because obviously that blood needs to be pure and clear from the infection. So I've been stopped 3 times, otherwise I've done a few more. But it's definitely worthwhile. I mean, I started it in 2007 when I worked at the Sky, and it was a mobile unit that came. It was parked in the car park. I thought, well, I'll go and have a look, and that's how I started. So I know some of the NHS wagons go around universities as well, so I'm not sure if you do that at Lincoln, but...
Oh, people often said that Rupert Murdoch gets people to give blood regularly for Sky, but that's a different comic entirely.
So. Oh, I know. Yeah. I was paid for it as well.
Yes, please. It's a different line. Eva, any thoughts or questions from yourself?
No, I've never really given blood or anything, but is it all different types of blood groups that the NHS are looking for, or is it just types in general?
I think it's
all. Yeah, it is, actually. And you'd think it was the most rare blood types they're looking for, and it's not, they're looking for the most common, because my blood and many thousands of plasma groups can be given to anyone. So if you've got a variant of, it could be a positive or negative blood type, when you're in hospital, any amount of these bloods can be used. So there's a multifunction task with some of the blood groups, so that's why they're wanting more people to come forward. I mean, to keep the blood stocks going, to put it in perspective, they need 6,000 donations every single day to cover the number of patients that need that blood. So it is that much, and it's any blood type, really, nothing. It's too little or too much for the NHS.
You got your A's, you got your ABs, you got your ABOs.
It's quite complex. It's quite a complex blood test system. And then obviously I've had the complexities of people who are from mixed heritage background as well. But once they've identified your blood, they often, if they're running low in certain areas, will contact you more vigorously to try and get you to come forward and donate. There's more women than men that donate as well, so there's a slight imbalance there. Yeah,
but generally, as Claire's father has demonstrated, we're just scared of the needles. That's it. It might be just a pint to your good self to me. It's an armful. Anyway, It's the old.
No, I think it's a mind over matter thing. People think it's very dramatic. You have to be in hospital. He's going to be unconscious, or it's very painful. And for the vast majority, it's not. It's just a needle, which is slightly broader than a normal needle you'd have to take blood in a GP surgery. Once it's in, you just lay there and let the machine do the work. And if you need to, just pump your fist. So it's really, really easy. And as I say, within a few hours of having it done, you'll be back on your feet, no problems. But someone goes on to benefit from what you've just done.
Liv, as ever, you've proven that you're heading towards sainthood, which is wonderful. That's what we appreciate about Liv Clark. Yeah, it's all good. Even though she has not got a great deal of positive things to say about Carlisle in terms of the language that they use. But that's okay. It'll happen. You know, we work good. Where exactly are you based then, Liv? I mean, so we
South Lakes, just outside the Lake District National Park, actually, in Kendal.
Yeah, so you're not that far away from Carlisle, really. I mean, in terms
no, far enough. Well, far enough.
Well, you know, we have to do a location
there's
report.
There's nothing
then.
Wrong with Carlisle. No one's listening from Carlisle. Nothing wrong with Carlisle.
No, very important. Claire, you're off to see Poet Laureate Joe Duffy. Carol Joe Duffy. Carol Joe.
Well, New name. Yeah, Carol Ann Duffy. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. It's Claire Ann Duffy. It's very confusing. It's one of the reasons why she only did the interview with me a few years ago. Who she was. But would you like to put those last two questions to Liv Clark, please?
Yes, I will do that. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
As always, I have, thank you.
Good. And will you be joining us again soon?
I will if you have me. Alex needs to invite me more.
Well, then we'll...
Other than me inviting myself on, I kind of did impose myself on
today. No, it was when the text came through, I immediately said, right, you might be from the Royal Mint, but you're going to have to take second place to Liv Clark. She's going to have to sort her way through. Likewise with William Sitwell and indeed Gemma Joy. We move the things to accommodate wherever... But yes, we will book you in very quickly for another return.
Lovely.
Liv Clark will return. Yay! Again. 1880s, or 1780s if we go even further back in time, when decimalisation was coming to America for the first time. And to address the importance of this, and also why the world's most valuable coin has arrived in the United Kingdom, we're delighted to be able to welcome to the wonderful Morning Edition World the true, amazing individual who is spokesperson for the London Mint Office. It's Nick Hart. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
Very well indeed. Now, I often think that for many folk, you think, oh, times pass, centuries go by, and we hear about all sorts of other areas here. Actually, this particular aspect about the world's most valuable coin, which all goes back to the former colonies, the United States, of course, as we currently know them, setting up their own system, which got rid of pieces of eight and all those pirate doubloon scenarios and started replacing it with something perhaps much more sensible.
That's absolutely correct. So you're absolutely right. You're at the end of the 1700s, and the fledgling, soon-to-be United States have decided they're going to go it on their own. They want independence from Great Britain. And, of course, with independence comes the need for a national currency. They, of course, have the Declaration of Independence and declare their own sovereignty. And they decide that the dollar will be their foundation currency. And flowing here, the most expensive and valuable coin in the world, it auctioned very recently for just over $10 million, was the very first American dollar coin, experts believe, that was actually produced. And it's astonishing to think that George Washington himself may very well have not only handled and seen the coin, but actually approved it. And now fast forward a few hundred years, and it's on public exhibition in the heart of central London, free of charge for everyone to come and see.
October the 15th, 1794 is the date that we actually have for when the first thing was actually struck from that point of view. And we mentioned, of course, decimalisation. I mean, clearly there's still arguments for people to say we should never have gone decimal in Britain, let alone anywhere else from that point of view, but that was the 1970s as opposed to anything else. This was this a case of, again, pioneering development? developments within the states, and you know, Jefferson's line and the founding fathers, were they actually looking to obviously be a modern state, a contemporary state, to actually sort of really show humanity a better way?
Well, I certainly think they were looking to do things their way. I mean, bear in mind, of course, that America's more recent history is very turbulent. I mean, Great Britain, France, Spain, Holland, of course, all had interests and were trying to stake their claim. I mean, in many ways, America, even before its immigration and the creation of the modern United States, was already a country that was trying to find and create its own identity. So yes, absolutely, it was a real statement. And looking at the coin itself, I think you also get an insight into what was happening at the time. In front of me, I've got a scale reproduction of flowing hair.
On broadcast haven't actually allowed you to actually bring the original one into the studio? I'm shocked.
Well, you know what? I'm a diehard coin enthusiast myself, and I was all over that idea. But yeah, Unfortunately, the owner and some of his security chaps said, Nick, we're not too sure about that, unfortunately.
Honestly.
And, of course, the other thing is I didn't have the $10 million necessary to buy it from him. Yep. So this scale reproduction, by the way, and the London Mint Office are giving these away free of charge to mark the occasion, so everyone can get one of those. So that's all they'd let me into the studio with today whilst I'm talking to you. But I'm looking at it right now, and I can see Liberty. And picture this, the Statue of Liberty, take off Liberty's coronet and imagine her hair flowing down her back. That's the flowing hair coin. That's the image that's on flowing hair. And what a statement that makes about those formative years of the United States. Here we see a very young Liberty in a very informal setting. I mean, surely that sets a scene, doesn't it? Can you imagine everything in front of her? The world at her feet, and how well that juxtapositions with America's statement of independence, a new nation with the world at their feet, all to come, all in front of them. Flowing hair, of course, and the 15 stars that are surrounding her. Of course, there were only 15 states of the United States at that point in time. So it's a marquee moment in history, and I think the imagery on the coin really signifies that historical moment.
And certainly looking towards that, clearly, as you rightly say, California had yet to be explored, developed. There wasn't any major issues with the Native Americans. There was an awful lot of history still to come after that whole sequence. But it is that, I say, living history. It sort of echoes of the past. Current owner, of course, you mentioned Bruce Morrillon, who's based in New Jersey, which I'm sure will go down very well with our New York correspondents. But we got very fortunate and actually grateful to Mr. Morrillon for actually allowing this coin to actually go on tour, because I suppose he could have actually just said, no, nobody's going to see it ever except me.
He absolutely could have done, but Bruce himself is a diehard coin enthusiast. I've got to say one thing. I'm a coin enthusiast as well, and there is nothing more that we like than to get together and have a chat and tell anyone else who will listen all about the stuff that we own and that we collect. So I think for Bruce it's a wonderful opportunity. And of course, the exhibition in London is a culmination of a European tour that's been taking place over the last week or two. The coin has been to Poland, it's been to Finland, it's been to Norway, the public interest has been enormous. And of course, we've been able to share the history of that coin with people who've been coming to see the coin at those exhibitions. I think for a coin enthusiast, there's nothing more that you could want. And for the London Mint Office in particular, we're all about trying to encourage as many people as possible to get the coin collecting bug. That's what we want to do, to introduce the idea of collecting coins, an opportunity to literally hold history in the palm of your hands. And so how could we not take this coin on tour? I think there were enough people interested in doing it who wanted to do it, and we've, despite all the complexities and all the challenges and all the security and all the costs that was needed, we managed to get this done. And on the 18th of March, for 2 days only, I think it's the first time the coin has ever been on British soil. I'm pretty certain it'll probably be the last time, but for 2 days, everyone can get to see it. What an opportunity.
Indeed so. And just imagine if we actually had a situation where it's bit money, it would just be lost in a virtual world, really. I mean, it's not quite the same with bit money and bit chips, etc. Paper money, I suppose it might have lasted from that point of view. But would you say that there is a case for going back to, I mean, clearly we still have coins and they're still actually there. But do you think that sort of care and clearly the emotion behind the whole thing, do you feel that we have a contemporary equivalent? Because, you know, looking to every time some people say, oh, the 50 pence piece, it's not what it used to be and so on. I mean, are there equivalents being struck today, perhaps?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because if we cast our mind back to when Britain went decimal in the 70s, the very same conversations were being had at that point in time. Oh, you know, that no longer would there be 240 pence in the pound, the threepenny bit, the much-loved 12-sided coin was being dispensed with. And
guineas would no longer be worthwhile, you know.
Absolutely. And I dare say we cast our mind back to the 1800s and the great recoinage, George III, when went from the guinea to the sovereign. I'm sure at all these historical moments, I think the contemporary move at the time would have been very much along the same lines. We can't do this, you know, for goodness sakes. This is how things have been for years. But I think that's a wonderful thing. Coins are so representative of the history in which they appear and the time in which they appear and the country's thinking at that time. And, of course, what seems controversial now, we come back to in a few hundred years and think, well, of course, this is natural. Look, go back to 1794 and the flowing hair itself. You know, this is all the time of independence. But believe it or not, not everybody in America wanted independence. Now, of course, the 4th of July, one of the most celebrated holidays in the U.S., and everybody is I won't say revising history, but, of course, everyone in America supports independence. Of course they do, but that wasn't necessarily the prevalent feeling at the time. So flowing hair herself appeared in a very controversial part of history. Equally, the decision to have the dollar. There were lots of currencies that could have been chosen, and at the time, I'm sure many people thought perhaps that wasn't the right one to have. But we've become so used to seeing these things over time that they become part of the fabric of our society and become part of the tradition. So, and I think reinventing it can always be difficult, but I'm absolutely certain that coins have a knack of always being contemporary from their time, and even if they're controversial when they're introduced, we look back on them years after and think, well, of course, how could anything else have happened? That was natural, and that was the way it should have been.
And clearly that is why the London Mint Office is at the heart of numismatics, to actually give the full scenario for that point of view, British numismatics as well. Nick, it's been fabulous just touching base with your good self. A reminder, of course, you can, of course, go online to londonmintoffice.org. That's londonmintoffice.org, which will give you, presumably, you'll have images of the coin there as well to look at the flowing door for people who can't get down to London for the 2 days it's actually there. But generally, it's been an absolute blast touching base with your good self. I know some of our American correspondents will be fascinated by this line as well. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Nick Hart? Has it been okay for you, Nick?
Yes.
Good.
Thank you very much.
That's all right. So hopefully we can connect together again in the not-too-distant future and talk about, if not the flowing hair coins, other coins as well, and indeed the joys of numismatics as a work itself. Will you return?
I will, and I shall look forward to it.
The band, or the duo, of course, were Dollar. I wonder why they played that then. Therese Bazaar and David Van Day collectively serving as the songstresses behind that tune, produced by Trevor Horn of the Buggles, and indeed they used to be with Guys and Dolls. There we are, never let it be said we don't give you complete information as far as the programme's conceded. Eva, what can I say? I mean, you obviously you're here.
I am.
Since you arrived.
I'm the last one standing.
Everyone of the Midwich Drivettes has just walked out. You know, Claire has gone apparently to see the Poet Laureate,
she
Caroline
has.
Duffy. We think, what, really? You know, seriously?
Last man standing.
Well,
or last woman.
Exactly. It's very important. William Sitwell, we are now going to attempt to actually reach and see whether he will actually pick up, because as we know from the early email, he said he's in the midst of interviewing Chef Alan Williams. So we can find out exactly what's happening on there. Still to come, of course, we'll be talking to Gemma Joy, who is actually based in Gisborough. And I'm not incorrect in that sort of assumption. Although she'll be talking about her recent trip to Liverpool, amongst other things. But I wonder, will William actually pick up on St. Patrick's Day?
Let's hope.
Or, well, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. This is it's critical. Yeah, it's the uncertainty that makes life interesting.
It
so could be going live, not could be in the midst of a really difficult question to sort through. Might have to take a little musical break. We might get his voicemail, of course. I suspect.
Hi, this is William.
It's his voicemail. It's his voicemail.
As soon as I can.
When you finish recording, please hang up or press the hash key for more options.
Very important. Very important that we press the hash key for more options. William Sitwell, happy St. Patrick's Day from both myself, Alex Levchuk, and...
Peter McDonald.
There we are, you see. We will try again, because obviously you're right in the midst of the interview with Alan Williams, so hopefully we'll be able to reach you in a few seconds from now. But keeping the Irish theme going just a tad... It's a little known fact, of course, Eva, that the unsung member of the Corr family, who really should have been front and centre, actually, is Gemma Joy, because you get Andrea Corr and various other things, but Gemma Joy would have actually been there. She decided, no, she'd hold back in every sentence. Yeah, just hold back a wee bit to work for that. It's Gemma Joy, the unknown member of the Corr singing group, So Young. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you, Gemma?
Thank you. I'm very well, thank you. I am learning guitar, so maybe...
You see? Yeah. This is it. Yeah. I know the brother has to go somewhere along the line, so you can just step into that line.
Oh, is there a man in there? Oh, I don't think anyone has noticed.
Gemma, please. It's almost as though you're back on the Ken Bruce show doing pop quiz. Oh, never mind. were you there, actually, Gemma, when we had Paul Daniels in our studios up in the our sister station at Southside? I'm not sure that you were or you weren't, but anyway.
No, I wasn't, but obviously he's a very famous Teesside person.
Well,
this is a sad day. Very good entertainer.
Exactly. And not as rumbustious as Roy Chubby Brown, which is, you might say, very good.
Right.
Before we get on to your adventures in Liverpool, yes, Gemma's Adventures in Liverpool is a whole new series, Eva McDonald.
Is it?
Let's introduce you to it, because I don't think you've had the joy of speaking to Gemma.
No,
have you?
I haven't.
See what we did there?
No.
Gemma, welcome back, as we said. I'm extraordinarily interested in a line that was commented on by a Melanie Wilson on your Facebook page, which has the quote, Eva, they look enormous on this pic.
Right.
They look enormous on this pic. What, Eva McDonald? What do you think
she's got? Tiny hands.
I thought that was the cursor. Oh no, that's all right. It's different. Hands. Yeah. What do you think they could be referring to?
I'm going to say hands.
Hands. No. It's chocolates.
Oh right. Okay.
Chocolates that is actually there. And is this a sort of regular sort of parting gift that you receive, Gemma? That just as you're about to leave to do another great adventure in the world, suddenly you get a packed lunch that arrives.
I hope so. I think it should be a regular occurrence.
Yeah.
It should be a bi-weekly thing at least.
I will swing the actual screen round so that Eva can actually see the chocolate. She might have to move the microphone out of the way. Oh, it's very confusing. You just move it to one side or down and around, and there you can actually see those particular areas, you see.
Oh,
so
right.
No hands at all, unless, of course, the hand is indeed the cursor, which looks a bit like a hand.
Yes,
happy St. Patrick's Day, Gemma, by the way.
Yes, thank you, and happy St. Patrick's Day to all of my Irish chums.
I was going to say, so apart from sort of going around using that classic line, where's me lucky charms, will you actually sort of be celebrating the great festival? Because as I just said to Eva, who astonishingly said, no, I'm not Irish, why should I? I said, everybody's Irish, surely, on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, I actually think there's a close link between how much you drink and how well you celebrate. Actually, I'm too tall, so
I'm going to
be partaking.
Yeah, well, that's good. And that's why, Gemma, always, you know, we started off this programme with Beverly Sunderland talking about substance abuse in the work environment, and I said that, you know, you need to include alcohol as well from that perspective, and Gemma is keeping that sort of, yep, sorted through. Bright, clear-eyed, sparkling. That's why she's become an ace. Well, she's always been an ace midweek driver at Eva. Of course, yeah, some of the rest of the team, Eva, rather Gemma, have kind of had to go and do various other things. We started off with 5 souls in the studio. We had Eva McDonald, of course. We had Claire Margerison, Tessa Snart, Emily Jones, and Emma Tinson. Three of them were journalists. One's an English undergraduate, graduate-to-be, and they've all gone.
Oh dear. It's just a sad trajectory. Have they gone to celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah. Now that might well be an interesting perception on the life of students in the 21st century, Jenna. I could not possibly comment on that side of things. No, precisely.
No, I have too much knowledge.
Point taken. You see, this is one of the reasons why we thought we'd sort of bookend the final hour of the morning edition this morning by having Liv Clark, who was actually one of my first communications undergraduates at the University of Humberside, to actually head off into the wild world. Now she's talking about giving blood. I gave enough for her when I was reading her dissertation. Sorry, Liv. So be kidding. And Gemma, of course, who was also an ace graduate of, I do believe, Gemma, it was indeed the last century. I know.
Wow. When you said ace, I actually thought you were going to say ancient.
No, ace, no, that's the important thing.
And, take that one, I don't care.
Yeah, it's very good. As we said, you know, working in the last century, it just shows that sort of wonderful package of time that sort of heads through and in every year. But Liverpool beckons, or has beckoned, and was this a treat? Did you decide to say, I'm going to take the girls to Liverpool because they need to learn Scouse? Calm down.
No, this is how you learn Scouse. If you want to speak Scouse, it's very easy. All you have to do is say, that's absolutely all you'll ever need to know. But no, I didn't take them for that. I took them for a pilgrimage to learn about the beetle, because sadly, it's not in the national curriculum. I think it should be. I didn't see that in the budget, apart from Michael Gove. Is he the Surrey Education? No, it's Nicky Morgan, isn't it? Yeah, it's Nicky Morgan. But sadly, the beetles aren't in the national curriculum, so it's my job to make them understand. So, yeah, that's why we went.
Gemma, I was going to ask you to rewind the sort of Scouse line that you actually said there, which I must admit passed me by because without subtitles. And Eva, did you know what she was saying at all?
I did, because I've heard it before.
So. Have you?
Yeah. I think, a can of Coke.
Right. That's okay then. I mean, there's
okay, once more with feeling.
Good. That's fine then. That was the telepathic view that Gemma was sending out there, and I think we've got it now. I think it's all come through. You're still there, Gemma, aren't you?
I am. Yeah.
That's all right.
I'm thinking about Chicklin Mechanical.
You see, it's beginning to decode. Yes. Extraordinary. Which Beatles tune would you like as a little sort of break in this fascinating and incisive interview, which demonstrates journalistic work at its finest, Gemma?
Oh, if you've got a long time, Golden Slumbers has got to be the best. But actually, I really love I Feel Fine, because you can't beat that feedback loop on the start of it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And as we're heading through this whole process, I mean, we've got a whole range of things that Mr. Computer's actually come through. Ah, relief and happiness. Because just sandwiched between Drive My Car and I Love Her, you do indeed have today's Gemma Joy choice.
Leo, she said so. She's in love with me and I feel fine. She's in love with me and I feel fine.
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador, and midweek drivette. It's Eva McDonald on the Midweek Drive.
There you have it. Gemma is still with us. Yay! Did that pass muster? Even though it was the Beatles, played down a phone line?
Oh, Beatles play down anything. Yeah. You can play them down a snorkel and they still sound good.
And that's the message we'd like you to take away with your good self today, particularly obviously is George Martin, of course, also left us earlier this year, the fifth Beatle, as he was often referred to. I mean, Eva, you're a musical student and you're a scholar, as we said. Yeah. You work through that perspective. Yeah. The Beatles sort of fall into your category?
I do like the Beatles, yeah. I quite like 60s and 70s music, so...
She was
Beatles, yes.
Indeed beside herself, Gemma, a few weeks ago when we featured one of the founding members of Shiwadi Wadi. Because,
I played that song quite a lot now. It's come back to me.
The classic Pretty Little Angel Eyes.
Yeah. I played that in my room and danced to it.
And that's what we feel. The next generation still connects with those of us who were around in the last century. Because we've always born in the last century. Just in case you're wondering in terms of that. It won't be too long, of course, Gemma, before we'll be coming up to it. In fact, we're your very own daughters. They think the people born in the 20th century, we might as well be ancient Greeks, I would have thought, really.
Well,
yeah, I think we're really sad.
No, we're just happy because we were around, or some of us were, with respect to the Beatles and so on. But not only were we going to talk about Liverpool, I see in the correspondence, and it was detailed and in very precise correspondence that obviously went between the two camps of Siren 107.3's Midweek Drive Morning Edition and the agency for Gemma Joy, because she has lots of riders on, not least of which is the chocolate. We had coping with Easter egg challenges. To which response was, well, that's doable. Now, I mean, is it a case of you think, no, my daughters are healthy and you know, we don't do that sort of thing? Or is it a case of the Easter bunny will be making an appearance around the Gisborough zone?
Yeah, it will. Do you know what my problem is? Is I think, yes, that's doable. Now, I have two problems with Easter. One, I always get Easter eggs in for the girls, and about a week before, I always eat them. And I've had this happen many times, so it's not a one-off, and the common denominator is me. Is I eat them, and then I go and think, oh, I'll replace them at the shop, and then next day there's no Easter eggs left in the shop. It's only the rubbishy brands. And they know full well that they get them because mummy has eaten Easter eggs. Second problem I have is the school Easter egg decorating competition is given with a day's notice. And there's also a parent competition this year as well, which the competitive mum in me wants to try and nail. But I'm a working mum and therefore I don't have time. So it's a dilemma.
It's just been fraught with challenges
and
other issues relating to that. I mean, astounding, you know, is all I can say. But Gemma, if anybody can actually cope, it will be you, my girl. You know, that's all I can actually say.
I'm going to try and pull it out of the bag, yeah.
I mean, remember, you are representing not just, you know, your daughters, but you're representing the Midweek Drive Morning Edition as well on this particular aspect. So.
I feel like I'm representing the last century now, so I feel like I should do it for the old folk. As it were.
Gemma, we don't talk about the O word here. We become more experientially enhanced or indeed chronologically gifted. I have spoken about this before, Gemma, and we must sort of keep that focus going. When are you going to join us on another location report, Gemma? Because the last time you were here with us was indeed the York Maze, I believe.
It was a while ago. I don't know. Let's have a think of what might be suitable. I'm
thinking possibly the Harrogate Spring Flower Show at the North of England Horticultural Society area, back end of April, would probably be a cracker from that sort of point of view. So I'll just float that out there. You know, I'll send you
that might be good.
Work that way through. We haven't even spoken about her work because obviously she's a working mum. She does everything. I mean, basically, without Gemma, the pharmaceutical companies would collapse across the world. That's the bottom line.
That is the world.
Genius, you know. I presume you are. Are you still in medical sales?
I am.
That's all right. There's the message. You see, that's the clear thing. We talked about giving blood. Gemma does that on a daily basis.
That's good. We're saving lives. Yeah,
exactly. But Eva, would you like to put those two questions, which as an early co-presenter as well, Gemma also used to have the pleasure of actually bowling these two things
she
as
did?
Well. So
oh,
go,
very good.
Go for it.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
I definitely have.
Good, good. And will we be hearing again from you soon?
You will.
Yay!
Yeah, champ.
Hey, have you talked to Mark lately?
I haven't really talked to him, but he looks pretty down.
He looks pretty down. Yeah, well,
maybe we should cheer him up then.
What do you suppose we should do?
Well, does he like butter tarts?
I was lying on the grass a Sunday morning of last week, indulging in my self-defeat. My mind was thugged on least, but it's all twisted.
To find out what lyrics were being put forward by the band Lem and Steal My Sunshine, check out this evening's edition of the Stone Tapes, in which the words "my sticky paws were into making straws out of big fat slurpy treats" will be addressed, amongst other things, together with Sam Stone, David J. Howe and Patricia Ash. Splendid. Okay, it's Thursday, March 17th, 2016. In case you're wondering, and you're just all thinking, what day does it happen to be? Actually, it's 17th of March, so it's St. Patrick's Day, so hopefully all will go splendidly. Eva, I gather your parents, or your mum at least, has actually gone off to Cheltenham for the Cheltenham Festival.
She has, yes. Oh, yeah. Cheltenham.
I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful thing. New grandstand as well, built
there.
Oh,
right. Yeah,
so new she might even appear on the TV and all sorts
is
of things.
Is that TV that I've never been there, so...
Never been to the Cheltenham Festival. Clearly, we have to put that right.
Yeah.
Almost as exciting as watching Elf with the Lincoln young people at the sort of Lincolnshire zone. Because, of course, you were a member of the Lincolnshire Youth Theatre, I believe.
I was, yeah, back in the day.
Wanted to address that fact, make sure it was quite clear. Otherwise, it would have been another sort of gap in the classic John Wenham event story to actually say, as once performed by Eva MacDonald, which is great stuff. A reminder, because you're wondering what it's all about, the Lincoln Drill Hall, Sunday the 20th of March, 5 p.m, the NYT, that's the New Youth Theatre Juniors, Elf the Musical. Thanks to Beverly Sunderland, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Nick Hart, Liv Clark, Gemma Joy, and Claire Margerison, Tessa Snart, Emily Jones and Emma Tinson. Thank you, dear listener. Thank you, Eva MacDonald. Have you enjoyed the programme today?
I have. Thank you.
Will you be back with us next week?
I will indeed.
There we are, you see, because the others won't be, because they're off to do all sorts of things. They're off to Surrey, they're off to Harrogate, they're off to... They're just
all over.
Exactly. They'll be celebrating the Easter scenario. But we'll be back, of course, on Wednesday as well, when hopefully Katie Dorr will be with us, together with the return of Larry Nemechek from the States. Ilana Rain will be with us, Cameron Tilby will be around, and we might even have the excitement, in fact we probably will have the excitement, of Derek Hamley also coming to town. I mean, it's so good. And great stuff, of course, happens between now and the Stone Tapes, because Siren FM at 107.3 FM continues ever onwards with great musical stuff, great magical material as the day proceeds. Jared Johnson, I believe, has managed to put his despair at Arsenal's loss to one side, and will probably be putting a programme together as well. That's probably doing an interview with William Sitwell, but that'll be later on in the day. But that's pre-booked, so he'll probably sort of say that's all sort of thing. Gladys Knight and the Pips kind of taking us out before Tears of the Clown and the Beat take us up to the news. That's it. Eva, would you like to say Happy St. Patrick's Day?
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
And even so.